Florence Nightingale's Notes on Nursing transcends its 19th century origins to remain one of healthcare's most influential texts. Published in 1859, following her groundbreaking work during the Crimean War, this slim volume fundamentally transformed nursing from a haphazard occupation into a respected profession. What makes this work remarkable is that despite being over 160 years old, its core principles remain startlingly relevant today. Modern healthcare luminaries, from Dr. Atul Gawande to Dr. Paul Farmer, have acknowledged their intellectual debt to Nightingale's pioneering emphasis on environmental factors in healing. Even Florence's famous lamp has become a universal symbol of hope and healing, appearing in healthcare logos worldwide. Beyond nursing, her statistical innovations and visualizations revolutionized epidemiology and data presentation, earning her posthumous recognition as the world's first female fellow of the Royal Statistical Society. Through these pages, we encounter not just a historical figure, but a brilliant, passionate reformer whose insights continue to save countless lives in modern healthcare settings. "The very first canon of nursing," Nightingale declares, "is to keep the air within as pure as the air without." This principle, seemingly obvious today, was revolutionary in an era when bad air, or miasma theories, dominated medical thinking. Nightingale understood that stagnant, contaminated air directly impeded recovery and could even cause death. The bedroom, especially at night, was Nightingale's particular concern. She observed that most bedrooms were foul by morning, precisely when patients were most vulnerable during sleep. Her solution was elegantly simple yet radical for her time. Open windows, functioning chimneys, and no tightly drawn curtains or shutters blocking airflow. She dismissed the common practice of opening doors to stagnant hallways rather than windows to fresh air, and rejected the notion that rooms should only be aired twice a day, as some nursing manuals suggested. Nightingale's insights on ventilation went beyond mere comfort. She recognized the delicate balance between maintaining air purity and appropriate temperature, especially for weakened patients who produce less body heat. Many patients are lost in the latter stages of disease from lack of attention to such essentials, she wrote, particularly noting the dangerous early morning hours when vital powers are at their lowest. Her practical solution combined good fires with open windows to create the safest atmosphere. What makes Nightingale's ventilation principles endure is their foundation in careful observation rather than prevailing theories. She witnessed how patients in poorly ventilated spaces developed predictable symptoms and how their conditions improved with fresh air. This evidence-based approach, revolutionary for her era, established ventilation as a cornerstone of healthcare environments. Modern hospital design, with its emphasis on air exchange rates and infection control, can trace its lineage directly to Nightingale's insistence that healing begins with something as fundamental as the air we breathe. "Without these five essentials, a house cannot be healthy," Nightingale asserted, outlining what we might now call the social determinants of health: pure air, pure water, efficient drainage, cleanliness, and light. Her holistic understanding of environmental health was remarkably ahead of its time. Nightingale didn't just identify these elements, she analyzed how architectural and social practices undermined them. She criticized architects who maximized investment returns at the expense of tenant health by designing buildings that trapped stagnant air. She condemned the practice of connecting drain pipes directly to sewers without traps, allowing fever to be introduced into the best houses. Even wealthy homes with dung heaps nearby or accumulations of old wallpaper, dirty carpets, and unclean furniture created conditions that made ventilation useless. What's particularly striking is Nightingale's understanding of how these elements interact. She recognized that cleanliness becomes pointless without adequate drainage, that ventilation is ineffective amid filth, and that darkness promotes diseases like scrofula and rickets. Her systems thinking approach, recognizing that health emerges from the interrelationship of multiple factors, anticipated modern public health by decades. Nightingale's perspective on disease transmission also challenged prevailing views. While acknowledging that diseases like smallpox spread in chains, like dogs breeding dogs, she also observed diseases originating in overcrowded rooms and evolving from one form to another as conditions worsened. "I have seen diseases begin, grow up, and pass into one another," she wrote, suggesting we should view diseases as adjectives, not as nouns, as conditions created by environments rather than autonomous entities. This ecological view of disease feels remarkably modern. When Nightingale writes that diseases are reactions to the conditions we create, she anticipates contemporary understandings of how built environments shape health outcomes. Her insistence that housing conditions directly determine health status remains as relevant today as when she first articulated it, especially as we confront modern housing crises and their health implications. "All the results of good nursing may be destroyed by one defect," Nightingale warned, identifying a critical but often overlooked nursing skill. "The ability to ensure proper care continues when you're not present." This principle of management, creating systems that function regardless of who's on duty, reveals Nightingale's organizational genius. "The most devoted nurse cannot be constantly present, nor should she be. Yet without proper management systems," Nightingale observed that even the most dedicated care could be undermined by simple oversights. A washerwoman entering the wrong room and shocking a patient just fallen asleep. A window kept open in the sick room while the passage outside remains closed, turning the room into a ventilation shaft for the house's foul air. Or important messages misdelivered because no one planned for the nurse's absence. Nightingale's insights on management reveal her understanding of systems thinking long before it became formalized. She recognized that being in charge meant ensuring proper measures were carried out by everyone, not just doing everything yourself. "The best leaders create systems that anyone can understand and continue in their absence," she noted, adding that pride should come from building sustainable processes, not from being irreplaceable. This approach to management anticipated modern healthcare's emphasis on standardized protocols and handoff procedures. When Nightingale writes that the essential question isn't, "How can I always do this right thing myself?" but, "How can I provide for this right thing to always be done?" she's articulating what we now recognize as the foundation of quality improvement and patient safety. Her observations about the challenges of coordinating care between professional nurses and household servants in private homes also foreshadowed modern healthcare's interprofessional collaboration challenges. The complaints she documents, nurses inappropriately ordering other servants around while claiming to protect patients, reflect tensions that still exist in different forms across healthcare settings today. What makes Nightingale's management principles timeless is their focus on outcomes rather than personalities. Good management isn't about asserting authority, but about ensuring patients receive consistent care regardless of who's on duty. This patient-centered approach to management remains as relevant in today's complex healthcare systems as it was in the Victorian sick room. "Unnecessary noise is the most cruel absence of care that can be inflicted on the sick," Nightingale declared, demonstrating remarkable insight into how sensory experiences affect healing. Her observations about noise reveal a sophisticated understanding of neurophysiology that science has only recently begun to validate. Nightingale recognized that it's rarely the loudness of noise that affects patients, but rather its quality and the expectation it creates. Intermittent or sharp sounds affect patients far more than continuous ones. She observed that patients often bear continuous noise, like scaffolding being erected, better than whispering outside their door. This insight anticipates modern research on how unpredictable stimuli activate the brain's threat detection systems more intensely than predictable ones. Her warnings about waking patients from their first sleep are particularly prescient. "If you wake him up after a few hours instead of a few minutes sleep, he will not sleep again," she noted, understanding that interrupted sleep cycles can trigger a cascade of physiological responses that prevent return to sleep. Modern sleep science confirms that disrupting sleep architecture, particularly during the first cycles of deep sleep, can indeed lead to prolonged wakefulness and increased pain sensitivity. Nightingale's observations extend to subtle forms of noise disturbance. Conversations held near patients' rooms, whispered consultations in the same room, and even the rustling of women's fashionable dress. The rustling of silk and crinoline, rattling keys, creaking stays and shoes harm patients more than medicines help them, she observed. This attention to seemingly minor disturbances reflects her understanding that healing requires a comprehensive sensory environment, not just medical interventions. Her insights about how hurry and bustle affect patients remain equally relevant. Visitors who stand fidgeting or sit prattling while a patient discusses important matters create harmful mental strain. Her advice, to sit within the patient's view, remain motionless, never gesticulate, and never make patients repeat requests, reflects an understanding of how cognitive load affects those who are ill. What makes Nightingale's approach to noise control so valuable is her recognition that these aren't merely comfort issues, but physiological ones. These things are not fancy, she insisted, explaining that every thought decomposes nervous matter more rapidly in the sick. Interrupting this process by abruptly introducing new thoughts forces harmful additional exertion. Modern neuroscience confirms this understanding. Cognitive demands require energy that might otherwise support healing processes. Second only to fresh air, light is essential for the sick, Nightingale declared, recognizing sunlight's profound physiological impact decades before science understood vitamin D synthesis or circadian rhythms. Her insistence that patients need not just light, but direct sunlight, that she would rather move my patient to follow the sun through different rooms than let them linger where sunlight is absent, reflects an intuitive understanding of sunlight's healing properties. Nightingale's observations about light were based on careful observation rather than theory. She noted that even uninhabited rooms with perpetually closed shutters develop a musty smell from air unpurified by the sun's rays, recognizing sunlight's antimicrobial properties. Her assertion that the sun is both painter and sculptor acknowledges its tangible effects on the human body beyond merely lifting spirits. This emphasis on light extended to patient positioning. Nightingale observed that patients instinctively turn their faces toward light, just as plants grow toward it. Walk through hospital wards and count how few sick people lie facing the wall, she challenged readers, noting that patients invariably turn toward whatever light they can access. This observation anticipated our modern understanding of how light exposure regulates hormone production and affects mood and healing. Equally important was Nightingale's recognition of variety's role in recovery. She understood that the nervous system suffers from environmental monotony as much as digestive organs suffer from dietary monotony. Patients confined to seeing the same walls, ceiling, and surroundings during long confinement experience tremendous nervous strain. Even those with severe pain but freedom to move between rooms are often more cheerful than those with nervous debility confined to one space. What's particularly striking is Nightingale's insistence that the effect of form, color, and light isn't merely psychological, but has actual physical impact. She observed fever patients suffering acutely when unable to see out windows and witnessed rapid improvement when bright flowers were introduced. This is no fancy, she insisted, noting that variety of form and brilliancy of color are genuine means of recovery. This holistic understanding of how sensory environments affect healing processes anticipated modern healthcare design by more than a century. Today's evidence-based design principles, incorporating natural light, nature views, and visual variety in healthcare settings, can trace their lineage directly to Nightingale's pioneering insights about the healing power of our sensory surroundings. Thousands of patients starve amid plenty from lack of attention to how they can actually consume food, Nightingale observed, highlighting the critical gap between prescribed nutrition and what patients actually consume. Her detailed observations about feeding the sick reveal both scientific insight and practical wisdom that remains relevant in modern nutritional care. Nightingale recognized that timing, quantity, and presentation of food could mean life or death for weakened patients. She observed that most weak patients cannot take solid food before 11 a.m. due to feverish nights and dry mouths. Yet caregivers routinely ordered inappropriate foods like mutton chops for breakfast. Her solution? Small, frequent liquid nourishment hourly anticipated modern approaches to feeding critically ill patients. Her insights about feeding schedules were remarkably precise. For very weak patients, she noted that 10 minutes delay could cascade into hours of inability to eat due to nervous difficulty swallowing. Life often hangs upon minutes in taking food, she warned, noting that while acute cases received punctual attention in hospitals, chronic cases often ended in death by protracted starvation that could be prevented with observation and perseverance. Equally important were Nightingale's practical rules about food presentation. She insisted that untasted food should never be left by a patient's side between meals, as this prevents them from eating anything at all. Patients should never see or smell others' food, see more food than they can consume at once, or even hear food discussed. This rule has no exceptions, she declared, noting that breaking it always reduces capacity for eating. Nightingale also challenged common nutritional misconceptions of her era. She noted that beef tea, despite its popularity, contained barely a teaspoon of solid nourishment per half pint, yet remarkably sustained patients who refused all other food. She observed that eggs don't equal a pound of meat in nutritional value and often disagree with nervous patients. She warned against providing meat without vegetables, which could lead to scorbutic sores even in England. What makes Nightingale's nutritional insight so valuable is her recognition that laboratory analysis couldn't substitute for careful observation of individual patients. Chemistry offers little guidance for sick diets, she noted, explaining that the patient's stomach must be its own chemist. This personalized approach to nutrition anticipated modern understanding of individual metabolic differences and food sensitivities. Her insistence that nurses must think systematically about patients' nutrition, tracking how much they've had and how much they should have, established nutritional monitoring as a core nursing responsibility. The patient's stomach won't wait for the nurse's convenience, she reminded readers, emphasizing that missed feeding opportunities couldn't simply be made up later. What's commonly diagnosed as fever is often merely a symptom of poor bedding, Nightingale observed, recognizing how improper bedding could create or exacerbate illness. Her detailed analysis of bedding and cleanliness reveals a sophisticated understanding of how environmental factors directly affect physiological processes. Nightingale's observations about bedding were both scientific and practical. She calculated that a healthy adult exhales at least 3 pints of moisture daily through lungs and skin, laden with organic matter prone to putrefaction. In sickness, this increases in quantity and toxicity. This moisture primarily saturates bedding since it has nowhere else to go, remaining there because only clean sheets are properly aired. Her solution, iron bedsteads featuring Rheocline springs that allow air circulation up to the mattress, anticipated modern hospital bed design by decades. For bedridden patients, she recommended 2 beds, allowing 12 hours in each while the other's bedding airs completely. This practice of alternating beds might seem extravagant, but Nightingale recognized it as essential for preventing the reabsorption of patients' own emanations that saturate unaired bedding day after day, week after week. This understanding of how environmental contaminants affect healing anticipated modern concerns about healthcare-associated infections. Her insights extended beyond bedding to all aspects of environmental cleanliness. She recognized that no ventilation can freshen a room where scrupulous cleanliness is neglected. Dusty carpets, dirty wainscots, and musty furnishings inevitably produce staleness that even open windows cannot remedy. Modern research confirming how environmental reservoirs harbor pathogens validates Nightingale's insistence that cleanliness is fundamental to healing environments. Her insights to cleaning was similarly ahead of its time. She observed that modern dusting merely redistributed dust from one place to another with doors and windows closed. Better to leave dust untouched than merely relocate it, she advised, insisting that true cleaning requires wiping everything with a damp cloth. This anticipates modern infection control practices that emphasize removing rather than redistributing contaminants. Her understanding of personal cleanliness was equally sophisticated. She recognized that the skin's function is disordered in most diseases, with nature often relieving herself through it. Leaving patients unwashed or in perspiration-saturated clothing interferes with natural health processes as effectively as administering slow poison. The relief experienced after careful washing isn't merely comfort, but a sign of relieved vital powers. This understanding of skin as an eliminative organ anticipated modern understanding of dermal detoxification pathways. What makes Nightingale's approach to cleanliness revolutionary is her recognition that it serves the same purpose as ventilation, removing noxious matter quickly from the system. Both environmental and personal cleanliness were integral parts of her holistic approach to creating conditions that support the body's natural healing processes. The most crucial skill for nurses is knowing what to observe, how to observe, which symptoms indicate improvement or deterioration, and which evidence neglect, Nightingale wrote, establishing observation as nursing's foundational skill. Her detailed instructions on observation reveal a scientific mindset that transformed nursing from intuitive caregiving to evidence-based practice. Nightingale was frustrated by the vague, opinion-based responses to questions about patients' conditions. When asked, "Is he better?" nurses typically offered subjective impressions rather than factual observations. Her solution was precise, targeted questioning, not, "Has he had a good night?" but, "How many hours sleep has he had?" This approach anticipated modern healthcare's emphasis on objective, measurable data rather than subjective impressions. She recognized how leading questions produce misleading information. Questions about appetite might receive the same answer from someone who can't take 2 ounces of food daily and someone merely not enjoying their usual 5 meals. Similarly, questions about diarrhea might yield identical responses whether the condition is approaching cholera or is a minor issue. Without trained observation, these crucial distinctions remain hidden. Nightingale proposed practical exercises to develop observational skills. She described an educational practice where a father and son would rapidly pass a toy shop window, then separately list observed objects, with the boy consistently outperforming his father. She suggested this practice would benefit nurses for whom ready and correct observation is essential. Without this skill, she warned, a nurse will be useless despite all devotion. Her insights extended to recognizing different patient temperaments. She identified 2 distinct types. The excitable patient, who reacts immediately to shock or medication but recovers quickly, and the accumulative type, who appears calm initially but may slowly deteriorate afterward. While many considered excitable patients difficult, Nightingale argued the accumulative temperament is more challenging because you never know when the consequences are over. This understanding of individual response patterns anticipated modern personalized medicine. Particularly important was Nightingale's insistence that nurses must observe patients' declining capabilities rather than waiting for patients to report them. Many fatal accidents occur when nurses assume patients can still perform tasks they managed weeks or months ago, without noticing their progressive weakening, she warned. A good nurse must observe these inevitable, calculable changes rather than placing the burden on patients to report their deterioration. What makes Nightingale's approach to observation revolutionary is her insistence that its purpose isn't collecting curious facts, but saving lives. She criticized practitioners who seemed more interested in detection than cure, who recognized patients couldn't recover in their current environment, yet continued administering medicine without attempting to remove harmful conditions. True observation should lead to action that improves patient outcomes, she insisted, not merely academic interest. Florence Nightingale's Notes on Nursing concludes with a powerful synthesis of her philosophy, one that continues to shape healthcare today. At its core is her revolutionary understanding that nature alone cures, while nursing's role is putting patients in the best condition for nature to act upon them. This principle fundamentally reoriented healthcare from heroic interventions toward creating environments conducive to healing. Nightingale insisted that her sanitary principles applied equally across all patient populations, children, surgical cases, and medical patients. She recognized children's particular vulnerability to environmental hazards, noting they respond more quickly and severely to poor air quality, improper temperature, uncleanliness, startling noises, improper food, and poor management. Her warnings about keeping children's sleeping rooms tightly shut being destructive or even fatal anticipated modern understanding of SIDS risk factors. What makes Nightingale's vision endure is her recognition that prevention constitutes a crucial nursing duty. She warned about hospital diseases like fever, gangrene, or pyemia developing if proper care isn't taken, anticipating our modern understanding of healthcare-associated infections. Her insistence that these complications were preventable through environmental management challenged the fatalistic acceptance of such outcomes common in her era. Nightingale also addressed misconceptions about nursing education. She distinguished between theoretical knowledge and practical skill, noting that while sanitary principles could be learned from books, practical nursing skills could only be properly acquired in hospital wards under experienced practitioners. This balanced approach to nursing education, combining theoretical understanding with supervised clinical practice, remains the foundation of nursing education worldwide. Perhaps most progressive was Nightingale's advice to women entering the profession. She urged them to avoid both prevailing jargons, one pushing women to do everything men do regardless of suitability, and another restricting women from men's work simply because they are women. Good work isn't remarkable because a woman did it, she wrote, nor is work bad because it's done by a woman. This focus on competence rather than gender anticipated modern professional standards by more than a century. Nightingale's legacy extends far beyond nursing. Her emphasis on environmental factors in healing influenced hospital design worldwide. Her statistical methods revolutionized epidemiology. Her insistence on evidence-based practice anticipated modern healthcare quality improvement. But perhaps her most enduring contribution is her vision of healthcare focused not on disease, but on creating conditions that allow natural healing processes to flourish, a vision that continues to inspire healthcare reform and innovation today.